This week's visit with Dr. Jim Shames, Medical Director at Jackson County Health and Human Services. He joins us once a week to field our questions about the virus, the vaccines, and the efforts to spread the one and stop the other. I think we're clear on which is which. Since we last talked, a clear downward trend in Jackson County cases has gotten clearer, and President Biden announced his plans for vaccine requirements in the federal government and for larger private businesses. Dr. Shames, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
So the local angle first, there seems to be some progress, but we're also just 8 days after Labor Day. Give us a mix of numbers and gut instincts about how you view the current picture.
Well, you're right. We were watching the trend over the last couple of weeks, and it does look like we've at least flattened the dramatic increase in positive cases, and we're probably turning the corner. Hospitalizations generally lag by a week or so, but nevertheless, we are seeing fewer people in the hospital. The ICU admissions are going down a bit. It's happening at a very high level. So even though we're improved, we still have, you know, a tremendous stress in our hospital system, and that's probably not going to go away for, you know, many weeks or months from now.
Yeah, I take what you say at face value with that a high level, because I realized yesterday I was thinking, well, that's not so bad. You know, Jackson County had more than 1,000 cases last week, but more than 100 would have been unthinkable back in late June.
Right, right.
So in a different situation. So another factor here, though, is you have all schools now in session, and I wonder what kinds of things you're looking for in news from the schools or hoping not to hear, maybe to put it the other way.
Well, I think the baseline is that our schools are really doing a really good job of trying to keep kids safe and the community safe. But that said, anytime you bring lots of people together in the middle of a pandemic, you know, undoubtedly you're going to have an increase in cases. And we are seeing that. We'll see, you know, how big a blip that becomes. But overall, I think it looks pretty successful, but we're definitely seeing an increase in cases, kids, some teachers, and some of that's going to trickle off into the community and affect, you know, their families and friends.
We have a question for you from somebody who only identifies himself as a concerned parent. We'll go by BD. And BD says, I'm very worried that Governor Brown is going to give back local control to schools. With this would be possibly removing the mask mandate currently in schools. Are you, Dr. Shames, working with the Medford School Board, and are the school board members and school district leaders listening to your recommendations? I understand that there are members on the Medford School Board that still believe COVID is a hoax and that wearing masks are ineffective. BD goes on to say, I feel it is very important that the children in schools stay in masks until they're able to get vaccinated. If it is given as an option, I feel many would forego the mask. This would result in many more quarantines and time away from in-person school. I want my children to be in school, safely in school. Thank you for your time, a concerned parent.
All right, I see three issues here. The first one is, I actually think that the president is frustrated with just asking people to do the right thing, and I see us heading in the direction of further mandates and taking some of that individual decision away from individuals and placing it in, you know, the state or the federal in terms of guidance. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I think that's what it's going to take. As far as the interaction with the schools, we have a representative who's becoming very knowledgeable now, who regularly meets with the school districts, the school nurses, and attends a weekly meeting around COVID with all the superintendents of the region. I try and listen in on that meeting as well, so I can kind of stay up to date. So I don't know so much about the individual school boards, although I did meet with one of the school boards last night virtually. Mm-hmm. As I said, it seems like everybody's trying to keep the kids safe, and now that we have the governor's mandates, I think that's going to really help the cause.
All right, so you have no idea. It doesn't look to you like the governor's thinking about backing off and making this more of a local decision?
I don't see that. I see the trend is going in the other direction.
Yeah, with the president certainly talking about vaccine mandates for certain jobs and for some private employers as well. This is the Jefferson Exchange. This is our weekly chat with Dr. Jim Shames from Jackson County Health and Human Services. He is Jackson County's medical director and our guest to answer your questions about COVID, vaccines, viruses, variants, you name it. That doesn't have to start with a V. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Back to the hospital issue that Eric talked about in his piece just preceding this. I see more hospital beds available, but not a ton. I mean, are beds opening up, Dr. Shames, because patients are dying, or are some people actually recovering?
Well, I think beds are opening up for a number of reasons. I think that the patients dying, unfortunately, is a reflection of just how many people we've had on ventilators. When you see, 25 people on ventilators, you can be sure that the majority of them, unfortunately, the vast majority of them are not going to make it, and so I think we're seeing a reflection of how sick people were, from a week or so ago. Yes, we are freeing up hospital capacity. And we're beginning to get back to elective surgeries. We have a meeting right after this where we get a better sense, more granular sense of where the hospitals are at. But I do know they're starting to be able to take that backlog of elective surgeries and get them done. However, it's still very difficult because we have all this additional burden from unvaccinated COVID patients that, are occupying spaces, as Eric said, that would have been filled by, the regular illnesses that hospitals have to deal with throughout the state.
Yeah, I'm looking at the numbers here. We have the OHA numbers in front of me for our region, which is Jackson and Josephine counties together as Region 5. Of the 440 non-ICU beds, 405 occupied at the moment, as of last reporting. Out of 57 ICU beds, 50 occupied, so just 7 ICU beds available. That's a small number. And as Eric pointed out, we're not really blessed across the state of Oregon with a lot of hospital bed capacity. Is that anything that public health has any influence on or input to?
If it does, it's happening at a different level. It's not a conversation that I've been a part of. I think it's a long-term strategy that Oregon has made to be a bit more efficient, perhaps, than other states. And these are the kinds of times where it comes back to bite you, perhaps. Although we've been pretty good about sharing resources around the state, when we were totally and still are quite overwhelmed here, places like OHSU can help, take some of the sickest patients off of our load. But I'm aware of the fact that Oregon is has the fewest number of free hospital beds at any one time.
But to the strategy, can I mention, go ahead.
Well, I just want to mention one more factor in turning the corner on this, which is that for the last week and a half or so, we've set up an aggressive outpatient monoclonal antibody treatment program, primarily through Asante, and it is a very effective way of keeping people out of the hospital. So I think I'm certain that some of our improvement has to do with that particular program keeping people out of the hospital. I don't know how much, but that's another thing that we've done that I think contributed to the turnaround.
All right, so after a positive test, you administer the monoclonal antibodies, and it looks like it turns things back the other way. You mentioned Asante. I noticed on OHA, the Oregon Health Authority's list of outbreaks, that Asante is still coping with one that has more than 100 people infected at some time within the Asante health system, which, of course, stretches across 3 hospitals in 2 counties. What steps are being taken, and how effective are they being at limiting its spread?
Yeah. Well, OHA, the Oregon Health Authority, has stepped in to assist Asante. There's a number of individuals, including, infection preventionists, et cetera, to work with their staff to, identify areas of weakness, assist them in identifying people who need to be quarantined. The problem, of course, is that it's occurring at exactly the time when Asante needs every possible staff person available. So it's been difficult. Everyone's been cooperative. And the third piece is that we're also expecting there's going to be a diminution in staff when the governor's mandate for vaccination comes along. So it's not surprising that the biggest employer in the region should have COVID cases at a point where COVID is surging throughout the community. I mean, they're regular citizens. They're doing all the things that everyone else in the community is doing. And unfortunately, you know, a significant number of them have not been vaccinated. So it's been a difficult time. I don't know the exact numbers right now, but it has been a significant number of cases in the Asante system.
We have a question from Gary No Town Given, who asks, we hear about the vaccination status of hospital patients, but how is this determined? By official patient records or by the word of the patient? I suspect sheepish patients wouldn't want to admit to being unvaccinated. That's from Gary.
Well, ultimately, we have a vaccine tracking system. So we know who got what, when they got it, which vaccine they received, whether they're due for a second shot, et cetera, et cetera. So that's all recorded. I don't know, but I suspect that a patient's status is looked up in the system when they're admitted to the hospital. I don't think they just take the patient's word, but I don't know that for a fact.
Okay. To come back to the hospital stuff for just a second, basically Oregon has taken a strategy of primary care, trying to make sure that people get attention early to health issues, and so they don't end up in the hospital. Was that the essence of what you were saying?
I'm sorry, relating to
what? Relating to the issue of hospital beds and the fact that Oregon doesn't have many per capita, 1.7 beds per 1,000 people.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think we have tried to emphasize primary care, primary prevention, you know, get people access to the health care they need to stay healthy. And so I do think that this is kind of a reflection of that. And I think that's true. I think in many other parts of the country, they're very specialty dependent. And I think that's a style of treatment, but I think the more efficient, appropriate style is to try and get everybody plugged into someone who gets to know them and can, you know, help them steer the system so they don't have to end up in the hospital very often.
Dr. Jim Shames, our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange, fielding our questions about COVID-19, 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Kat in Ashland asks if you're accounting for home testing in the official numbers. I know people who use home testing but don't get an official test to confirm positive. Do those end up in the counts of cases?
I think some home tests do, PCR tests that are sent away, but you know, the shift now is to home antigen testing, and I don't believe we have a way to track that. And that's an example of sort of a strategy that I personally think makes a lot of sense, which is to empower people to do testing at home frequently when they feel like they need to know an answer, and yet we're going to miss those unless, you know, they enter in the system because they're a case, and we interview them, and we put them in the system. So, yes, we're going to miss some of those positives as home testing ramps up.
Okay. MFB, No Town Given, says, I was in a local chain pharmacy on Sunday when someone came in to ask for a vaccine. They were told they didn't have a nurse on staff all the time. Where can I go? And the person did not get a good response. So I called a local non-chain pharmacy and asked about a vaccine and was told they don't give them. Shouldn't these places have easy go-to lists and otherwise be more helpful? And MFB tagged on, can I, as a patient, request care only from vaccinated health professionals?
Last one first, there's no reason you can't ask. And generally whatever kind of answer you get will often give you the answer you're looking for. Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, it's ultimately your body and the kind of risks that you want to take. As far as where to go, the county tries to keep current on where you can go to get vaccinated for what on their website, 211 is a resource. And I recognize that, you know, any resource like that can at times be frustrating, but there is an attempt to keep them current. So I would probably go there first to see what your options are.
Okay, let's see. Randy in Rouge says, an unvaccinated physician friend recently died of COVID, which I found to be extremely disheartening. I place the majority of blame for this directly on the GOP's unwillingness to promote the vaccine. Truly appalling, writes Randy in Rouge. You guys are getting allergic to politics, I'm sure, but it must be hard to stay completely out of them when you're right in the middle of all this.
I think all of us in public health are doing our best to try and look at the science, look at the data. We can't ignore the fact that this has been hugely politicized and socialized, but it always has been. I mean, we've had, you know, the work to get rid of smallpox or to vaccinate against polio or even childhood vaccines for, you know, serious childhood illnesses. That has to some extent been politicized in the past. I've just never seen anything like it on this scale.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Dick in Medford on the phone. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Jim Shames.
Welcome. Thank you. Dr. Shames, I can't remember the number of people at Asante who work at Asante who are presently infected. It's more than 100.
More than 100 is the only number, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anyway, do you have any idea whether the majority of these Asante employees came down with the or got infected from people in the hospital, in other words, in the workplace, or did they get infected outside the workplace and they're actually safer in the hospital than they are, you know, at Sherm's Thunderbird or whatever?
All right, not to rank on Sherm's Thunderbird, but thanks for that, Dick. And Jim, you got about a minute.
Okay. Yeah, that's an astute question. And I don't know that my information is entirely current, but previously the majority of the cases were linked to their work and their interactions outside the facility. Of the ones that passed it back and forth in the facility, often it was during sort of off times, like in a break room or when people are congregating together, and very little was really involved in direct patient care where people were wearing complete PPE. So I think that's generally the breakdown, but it still stresses the system greatly because of how much COVID is in Southern Oregon at the moment.
Right. Dick, thanks for that question. Thanks to all the folks who emailed in questions, too. We had a pretty good load this week. Dr. Jim Shames is the medical director for Jackson County at Jackson County Health and Human Services. Thanks for answering our questions once again.
Yeah, Jeffrey, and I'll see you next week.
All right, take care.